AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Traders are sending a clear message this morning that they do not want to be on the long side of the grain, oilseed, or cotton markets heading into the 4th of July weekend. And the Supreme Court obviously wanted to clean its slate before the weekend. It's been a long time since the Supreme Court has given the ag markets this much to think about.
Live from the weekly grand finale via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a chat with Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. Then it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and yours truly standing by. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, here we are, the end of the week, heading into a three-day weekend. Markets closed on Monday. Government is closed on Monday, but AgriTalk will be right on the dial, right on time, and ready to roll on Monday morning.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We're not going to leave you hanging, everybody.
We're making sure of that this week so that it'll be ready to go on Monday. Yeah. Good stuff. How are you? How's the week?
You know, I think it's pretty good. It's been a whirlwind of a week for me.
The reports yesterday really stirred things up, didn't they?
It really did. They really did. Lots in the water. Lots to talk about today. It's kind of hard to keep it all straight.
And like I said, the Supreme Court is involved. And we've got EPA decisions that we need to talk about. It's not all that often that the Supreme Court, a Supreme Court decision, makes its way even into the conversation on the Friday free-for-all. But to have two decisions recently to make it into the conversation, I think is really something. So, and then EPA's decision to reopen the re-registry of atrazine. Davis, I got multiple phone calls after yesterday afternoon's show when we had Chris Edgington on. Chris is president of the National Corn Growers Association, talking about the decision by EPA to open up the re-registry. Multiple phone calls of, this can't be right. Are you guys sure that this is right? Just honest disbelief from farmers and some in the industry, just honest disbelief that EPA is considering action that would essentially take atrazine out of the toolbox for farmers.
Well, and so then what we would be looking, you know, and first of all, good thing there isn't a, you know, global food crisis going on or anything like that. Or anything like that. Not to mention the conservation, the implications for tillage.
Yes.
If you remove this tool from the toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, duh.
Exactly.
Duh.
Chris's comment was that this would be a major step backwards.
Yes.
For
yes.
conservation efforts and for efforts that are in place that farmers have voluntarily put in place because of tools like atrazine, are voluntarily using to control runoff, to reduce runoff of products like atrazine. It's just it's really interesting. We'll get into the conversation in the free for all coming up here in just a little bit. Okay, man, let's get started. What you got in the news?
What's up? The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta's closely watched GDP Now tracker estimated that output contracted 1% during the second quarter. That would mark the second straight quarterly contraction. The chip, two straight quarters of contraction would not necessarily indicate a recession has occurred, though it is a rule of thumb. Officially, recessions are determined by a panel at the National Bureau of Economic Research. That's a nonprofit academic group. Chip?
Yeah, okay. That National Bureau of Economic Research uses two consecutive quarters of contraction of contracted GDP as you said, a rule of thumb in determining whether or not we are in a recession. You know what my argument on this has been for quite some time. It's not a matter of if, it's just how long it's going to last and how deep it's going to take the economy.
Well, the Supreme Court has made it more challenging for the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gases and fight climate change as justices ruled Thursday in favor of Republican-led states and coal companies that asked the court to limit how much the EPA can control emissions from power plants. While the case was focused on the EPA, critics have warned the court's ruling could be used to stymie other federal agencies' abilities to impose regulations and make policies themselves rather than Congress. Chip?
Man, oh man. The reaction to this was very swift, and we are going to talk about this, obviously, in the free-for-all and with Jeff Cooper from RFA when we get him on here.
Good.
But the reaction was aimed at the court and saying that the court has lost control. And that we need to get them back on track doing their job, when the ruling is basically, listen, Congress, do your job. Don't leave it to executive action or to the agencies to determine programs and laws and rules and regulations. That is your job. So it's throwing that responsibility back at Congress.
Well, we mentioned this earlier, but here's the official story. EPA is proposing revising its registration for atrazine. Iowa Farmer and National Corn Growers Association President Chris Edgington told AgriTalk the latest development marks a step backward in EPA's commitment to transparency and the use of the best available science. Chip, more than 50 bipartisan lawmakers signed a letter to the Service Transportation Board, which highlighted poor rail service experienced by feed mills, integrated livestock and poultry operations, and other ag operations. The letter reads, quote, "This has led to shutdowns and slowdowns at ethanol plants, soybean crushers, flour mills, and livestock and poultry feed mills that are severely challenging ag supply chains and leading to lower prices for producers and higher food prices for consumers." The contract between the International Longshore and Warehouse Union and the Pacific Maritime Association is set to expire today. Yeah. The union members primarily operate machinery like cranes and forklifts that move cargo containers on and off ships. Representatives of the two sides previously said they did not expect a deal by the deadline, but that they were dedicated to working toward an agreement. Some shippers are already rerouting goods from the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach to the East Coast to minimize risks heading into the peak fall shopping season.
Yeah, boy, logistics issues are all over the place, and railroad and rail labor is a big problem. So it's something that we really need to keep track of.
Well, President Biden and NATO leaders pledged to support Ukraine for as long as it takes, although few were willing to offer an actual time frame for an end to the conflict. Meanwhile, Russian missile strikes hit an apartment building and a recreation center near Odessa, killing 18 people. And finally, China's ag ministry said its sow herd fell more than 8% in May compared with a year ago, more than the almost 5% decline previously estimated. But the total size of the breeding herd did not change, this according to data on the ministry website. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Yeah, Jennifer Scheich is off at a hog show right now as we speak.
That's right.
Couldn't join us today, but I know that she wanted to comment on the quarterly Hogs and Pigs report. Basically, guys, that Hogs and Pigs report, as we talked about on the afternoon show, showed contraction in the industry here in the U.S. at a rate about as expected. All right, we've got Jeff Cooper and the free-for-all next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by United Animal Health, where their science allows you to maximize your genetic potential. Learn more at unitedanh.com.
Davis, don't fear the free-for-all. Step on in, man. It's okay.
Can I get a little more cowbell?
You can definitely get more cowbell.
Just a little. I don't need a lot. I don't ask for much, Chip.
I know you don't. I know. You're absolutely not.
I'm a simple man.
It is free for all time. Davis Michelson sitting in with us today, of course. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
All right. How are things today, Jim? Everything all right?
Yes, we're going into July 4th. I like that because I can eat.
Amen, brother.
Amen to that. Love it. Love it. Love it. All right. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, Chip. Great to be here. I want to wish all of the Canadian AgriTalk listeners a very happy Canada Day today. So we're a couple days ahead of you with our national celebration. Yeah. But here you are
on the free-for-all.
Well, partly because I forgot to see, I might not be here, but I am so glad.
So here by default is Sean Haney.
I'm so glad to be here. We're good, man. It's all good. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. It's all good.
There certainly is. Certainly is. Including some big news out of Canada this week. So we're going to get right into that here pretty quick. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, joins us. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chip. Good to be here.
Glad that you are here. Okay, let's start right off with a couple of items on the list with Jeff. The Supreme Court of the United States decision to restrict EPA's ability to regulate emissions from power plants. Jeff, what's RFA's reaction to that?
Well, Chip, this decision is a big deal. And really what it does is it puts the ball back in Congress's court on climate policy, on greenhouse gas mitigation. It really takes the ball away from the executive branch and ties EPA's hands on what they can do on their own. The Supreme Court was very clear in its decision yesterday that regulatory agencies can't take actions that have significant economic or social repercussions unless there is clear and specific language from Congress that gives them that authority or delegates that authority to the agency. And they found in the case of the Clean Power Plan that authority does not exist. Congress did not direct EPA to regulate emissions from power plants in the way that EPA was proposing to do.
Right. Jeff, this seems like it will force the administration to alter its climate agenda in some way. It
will, and that's why it has much broader implications than just the Clean Power Plan, and in fact it's got broader implications than just environmental policy, than climate policy. This could extend to healthcare, telecommunications, financial sector, other regulatory areas, because again what the court said is there's going to be, there could be much less deference to regulatory agencies moving forward. Congress is in charge of making laws the executive branch and regulatory agencies are in charge of implementing those laws.
Yes.
And so, it could have some broader implications far beyond just the Clean Power Plan. We've looked at what might it mean for the renewable fuel standard and for ethanol, policy that's important to ethanol producers. We don't see much near-term impact on the renewable fuel standard, but it could down the road, Chip, really prevent EPA from For example, attempting to morph the RFS into a low carbon fuel standard, or or using the RFS to really expand demand for electric vehicles, or forcing the adoption of EVs through the fuel economy standard. So it could have some implications further down the road for programs that are important to us.
Certainly could. Jim, I know that you've been spending a lot of time looking at this and dissecting it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think he's spot on, because this is basically telling the Supreme Court to do your work. And agencies and departments implement policy directed by Congress. They can always put in discretionary authority, and then they're at right to do so. But I think relative to the RFS reset, this is important, because Congress has done very little on this. So, and most people were telling me that it's going to be up to EPA and who's ever in the White House. Now this calls that into question, Chip.
But when I saw this, and I appreciate Jeff's comments, is, you know, we're in what, the third string of presidencies where we've been kind of drunk on executive orders, right? Because Congress can't get anything done. And so now it's being pushed back to Congress. And so it's like, is this just like now nothing will ever happen? And this, and to, like, go ahead.
To me, this is a clear signal or a clear message from the Supreme Court to Congress and to the executive branch, saying enough is enough with these executive orders. Knock it off. That's not how laws are supposed to be made in this country. Congress, do your job. Jim?
Well, especially as it relates, again, to departments and agencies such as EPA. I'm not quite so sure on executive orders by the president. There's more loopholes there. But what this tells me, Jeff and Chip, is that I think this increases pressure on the Democrats to do a Democrat-only another reconciliation bill to include some of their green new energy deals. So I'm upping the odds. If they want anything done, and they do, they'll go for it now.
I totally agree, Jim. I mean, we've been sitting on reconciliation for how long now? And you know, it just hasn't moved anywhere. You got Senator Manchin that's continuing to, you know, kind of hold the keys to the kingdom on that. I do think that this decision really increases the pressure on Senator Manchin and Democrats in both chambers. If they want climate legislation, they better get their ducks in a row pretty quick, because, you know, with August recess just around the corner, there isn't going to be much that gets done after that. So they've got about a month if they want to try and get some climate policy done via reconciliation.
Agreed.
And we're focused on the EPA because, you know, we're trying to, from the standpoint of biofuels, hold EPA accountable and make, you know, see what they're doing here. But, you know, this also, does this not also carry over to be careful, USDA, what policies you sort of dream up? And is there potential downsides there from this decision from the Supreme Court this week? Is there examples that we should be concerned about?
Well, I thought about that. But Congress goes willy-nilly sometimes in the writing of farm legislation with discretionary authority, and that's all they need to cite usually. Yeah. Primarily, this is the Commodity Credit Corporation Charter Act. But to be fair, the House and Senate Ag Committee staffers and lawmakers have worked with USDA in both Republican and Democratic administrations to do some of these ad hoc pandemic safety net programs that we've seen. So it's not as onerous as EPA acting on its own in this case.
Okay. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the next segment, but I want to change topics here real quickly and get Jeff's take on it. Canada's clean fuel regulations. It's a big win for biofuels, right, Jeff?
It is a big win for biofuels and a big win for ethanol. Canada has been our largest export market the last several years. It's certainly been our most consistent export market. And with the finalization of clean fuel regulations in Canada this week, we think there's room for growth in that market. And they're going to be leaning very heavily on higher blends of ethanol and more liquid biofuels to help meet the goals of that program through 2030. And we see a real opportunity to expand E15 and higher blends, you know, flex fuels like E85. in that marketplace. And certainly we think the Canadian industry is going to continue to grow as well as a result of these regulations being finalized.
All right, very good. Haney, we'll get your reaction to it when we come back in at the start of the next segment. Because here we are, Jeff. Summer driving season is here, and there are some really – some stations are making an effort to put E15 as the number one priority on their pumps.
They are, and we're seeing some of the major retail chains like Sheetz and Rutter's and others that are offering E15 really slash their prices on those blends. Sheetz has a big promotion right now at more than 350 stores. They are selling E15 for $3.99 a gallon. And in many cases, that's a dollar a gallon less than what you'd pay for E10. Their E85 is even cheaper. They got E85 at $3.49. And that's getting people's attention as they head out for the 4th of July weekend and really causing a good conversation, a healthy conversation about these higher blends.
Right. Absolutely. Jeff, happy 4th of July to you, my friend. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
All right. Same to you, Chip. Good talking to you guys.
All right. That's Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. We're going to keep the conversation going with Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Michelson next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. Welcome back, man.
Yep, not the best market day to come back to, I can tell you that.
No, we've got Dee's corn got within a nickel of a $5 handle this morning. What's going on in that market?
Well, a lot of it's the soy complex, Chip. Corn futures tried to work higher overnight and just didn't get sustained buyer interest, but really it's soy complex. Just broad losses there and broad sharp losses. Soybean, soy meal, and soy oil all heavily lower. There is unconfirmed talk that China washed out some old crop U.S. soybean purchases, so that's putting some of the pressure on the soybean market. Weather looks like through the holiday weekend and the next 10 days to 2 weeks or so, there'll be a couple waves of rains come across the Corn Belt, and that's also putting pressure on both the corn and soybean markets.
Yeah, corn prices 5 to 10 cents lower. We've got bean prices basically 50 cents lower in the new crop contracts. Meal and oil sharply lower as well. Wheat is 35, 40 cents lower in the HRW and in the spring wheat. We've got SRW, call it 25 to 30 cents lower. Take us to the cattle trade. What's going on there?
Well, because of the sharp weakness in the grain markets, we are seeing strength in both live and feeder cattle futures pushing sharply to the upside. So that is a positive development there. And we saw what is likely going to be firmer trade again this week in the cash market. We'll have to wait till early next week to get the averages there. But it looks like the cash price firmed again. And then the hog market front end is trading to the upside, a little bit of weakness in the back end.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Stressed down a running lane, racing down the
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Free For All. We've got Wiesmeyer, Haney, Michelson, and me in the conversation. Haney, we talked very briefly there with Jeff Cooper about Canada's clean fuel regulations. What's been the reaction?
Well, so far we've heard positive. So, you know, Jeff is extremely right. I think there's an opportunity here for increased exports of U.S. ethanol into Canada as they, you know, try to build up capacity. Essentially, this brings us to E15 nationwide by 2030. But it's not all about biofuels. There's a lot of ways you lower the carbon intensity of fuel. One of them is a part of this is also building infrastructure for electric vehicles in the future. So Canola Council of Canada, which is really looking at renewable diesel as a huge opportunity because canola is such a preferred feedstock for renewable diesel, even in comparison to soybeans, nothing but praises, right. Talking about how this removes some of the regulatory burden for renewable diesel growth in the future. And obviously, Canada does not consume anywhere near the fuel that the U.S. Does. So, you know, there's a big opportunity for exports of renewable diesel out of some of the plants that are intended to be built into the U.S. going forward as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What strikes me about this, because I saw the inclusion of the infrastructure for the EVs, it doesn't really change the end game, but it's an actual plan to get to the EVs. It's not just like saying we're going to, well, no, stop driving those and start driving electric vehicles. It's an actual plan to get there, right?
That's actually, I think that's a fair assessment, Chip, actually. This has been in the works for a long time. We had a biofuel lobbyist, the Canadian version of Jeff Cooper, on our show yesterday. And we talked about this. This has been in works for a long time. What was rumored, like, say, 2-3 years ago, it was like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe they're going to move forward with this. And they've kind of worked their way back to something that I think all sides of this equation are going to be somewhat happy with. Some farmers are concerned about, you know, what does this do for the price of fuel going forward? I know there's going to be increased demand, but is this just another additional carbon tax on top of the carbon tax we already have? That needs to work itself out. There's some communication to be done there. But all in all, the industry is looking at on the biofuel side and, say, the canola industry, looking at this very positively.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very good. Jim, back to the Supreme Court decision that limits EPA's authority on the emissions and climate change issues. That decision that, like we were talking about, it is basically says Congress, do your job. Agencies aren't supposed to be making laws. Is that going to put a focus on how USDA has been tapping and using some CCC funds?
Well, there's already a focus on that, Chip, and I think in the next farm bill, they're going to do some more specifics relative to the use of the CCC Charter Act. They don't want to put too many constraints on that, but I think maybe with the advisement of the ag committees, et cetera, but they have to put it into law. But I think it will have some impact. But this was already in place as a concern even before the Supreme Court ruling.
Okay. Another Supreme Court decision that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about on here. Jim, they're not going to hear the RCAF checkoff case.
No, because of some of the merits and some of the other issues. Now, I didn't ever see RCAF's response to that, but I know the National Cattlemen's Beef Association agreed with that assessment, Chip. So I think this lays to rest that issue.
Yeah, that's the take from Henderson as well, Greg Henderson at Drovers, that this is this was the last gasp for RCAF's efforts to challenge the checkoff. And
yes,
so from going forward now, the beef checkoff is going to continue as it stands. It's not that it can't be revised later, but as things stand, it's going to continue on, right?
Yes. And I think to me, on a personal basis, I think that's good. The checkoff does a lot of good things, and it's usually in market development, Chip, as you well know. And I think if different groups are not just limited to beef, I know the hog sector and even the crops, they've done a lot of good forward planning with some of their checkoff funds. I'm supportive of it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, Chip, on that note, in terms of checkoff funds, because we get the same questions up here, not necessarily the challenge to the top level of court on checkoff, but we saw this week Health Canada made a decision to this is an example of where those checkoff dollars go to good use from a lobbying perspective. Health Canada was going to basically essentially put a warning label on the front of ground beef and pork at the store, almost like a cigarette. Warning and saying, hey, warning, high in saturated fat. And the industry really created a campaign, don't label my beef.ca. They had a ton of people sign the petition, and Health Canada changed their mind. And obviously it wasn't politically the best way to go. And there you go. It's a win for those lobby checkoff dollars.
So basically what turned that argument and kept that label off is that the nutritional benefits of what's in that package far outweigh the risks, right?
Yes, and especially for people on the low income side,
right?
Right, the ground beef and pork is a staple in a lot of houses, especially at that lower income end, and that was really where a lot of the argument was being pushed by Canadian Cattlemen's Association.
Haney, that turned a potential really negative story into a story that the Canadian cattlemen should be shouting and the pork producers should be shouting in their marketing going forward.
Absolutely. And I really, the turning point for me was when Diabetes Canada and the Heart and Stroke Foundation came out in a story in the Globe and Mail and basically said, we need this legislation, give the exemptions, basically saying, give beef their exemption and pork. We need to move forward with this. And that was kind of that sort of showed you the tide was turning. From a U.S. perspective, there was a lot of concern here. Remember, we've got a long history of mandatory of country origin labeling that Canada's been arguing against. There was a lot of fear that this would be looked upon as a trade irritant for U.S. beef trying to get into Canada. So there was a trade angle to all of this as well.
Very good. Okay. Another one. And this is EPA, it feels like an overreach, Jim. EPA's decision to reopen registry of atrazine. Like I said at the start of the show, dude, after we had Chris Edgington on yesterday on the show, I got multiple calls with from people that just couldn't believe that EPA is considering this. Go ahead.
Well, they must have, let's hope they had some of the reason for saying what they did, Chip. But once again, this is a good linkage to our prior topic because the 60-day comment period, this is when the Aggies, who are really wailing about this now, should do their educational effort and convince EPA that on different levels. It's not the same as we just discussed relative to, the Canadian issue, but it has similarities. So now their work begins to show the benefits of atrazine. And I frankly think that will happen.
Yeah,
I think that they'll back off somewhat.
Yeah, like I think it was during the news, Davis had mentioned tillage. So at a time where we were trying to sequester more carbon from trying to accomplish some of those goals, this removing atrazine is an example of where there is some, here I'll say it, unintended consequences. We haven't said that phrase yet on today's show, but that's really what it is. And so here's what has to happen, because at the end of the day, farmers have to control weeds.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it reduces yield, which has an impact on food production. So you need to connect all those dots for people so that they, at the end of the day, the consumer's like, well, I don't want that. Okay. Well, geez, you didn't explain it to me before like that. That's terrible. That's the route they have to go.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Got a note. He won't care if I say his name. I got a note from an old friend and an analyst, Dale Durkholz. He was at AgriVisor for decades. And he was talking about this study that that concluded, Jim, that the use of gas stoves, I mean, you know, like in the kitchen, gas stoves, gas ovens, that they cause cancer, Jim.
I wonder if it was based in California. Yeah, that's the silly stuff you get. You know, just, you know, this too shall pass, you know, but it sounds like California.
Yeah, it's a Harvard study. It's a Harvard study.
East Coast, West Coast, you get the same.
Yeah. Now, Dale made a spot on comment, though, that and I think it's really important to understand this. Anything to do with fossil fuels, they're going to find a problem with it, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is part of the way that we are going to regulate fossil fuels out of our lives.
True.
Yeah.
You doesn't know? Make it right, but that's they'll do it.
No, yeah,
I haven't seen the comparison on not necessarily studies on causing cancer, but I have seen efforts to talk about ban barbecuing.
Yeah,
because barbecuing burns propane and natural gas, and think about how you're going to save the climate, the earth, if you don't barbecue.
Right,
it seems sort of like ridiculous, but these are the efforts that people are making.
You can remove sort of from that statement.
Okay,
seems ridiculous.
Yeah. It is ridiculous.
Absolutely. That is not going to happen. Okay, a couple of big reports from USDA's NASS yesterday. We had the acreage estimates and the quarterly grain stocks reports. We've got some details to talk about. We'll do that next on the Free for All.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Let's sprint into the end of the free-for-all on AgriTalk this Friday. Welcome back. I'm Chip. We've got Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture Sean Haney. Davis Michelson is along for the ride in the conversation. And big reports yesterday, guys. USDA delivered the quarterly grain stocks report. On the surface, they look like they shouldn't have had any impact at all on the markets, Jim, because they came in right in line with trade expectations.
Well, except soybeans. I mean, they were down, 2.6 million acres from the March
intentions.
Well,
I'm talking grain stocks.
Oh, grain stocks. It was about as neutral as you could get.
Now, the only thing that I want to point out, and we talked about this with Brian Split from AgMarket.net yesterday afternoon, the only thing I want to point out, big increases in on-farm stocks from year-ago levels. After the markets have done what they have done, for there to still be an impressive, more than 2 billion bushels of corn stored on-farm, now it may be priced, I get that, it may be priced, but for it to still be stored on farm, it gives me some concern about what might happen to basis as we make our way through the rest of the summer. Haney, have you had that thought?
Or also tells me we don't need any ad hoc farm programs going forward in the Corn Belt. If you can
hold
on to inventory this long. As I look at this, Chip, it really sort of, I think we are moving from where it has paid to be on marketing offense. The inventory is in extremely tight hands. You will not rip it from me. This market is going higher because of variable X, Y, Z, and Z. And we're transitioning to defense. And where the floor is, well there is put. One. But I think that is there a justification to go back to the absolute high? It's less and less likely based on some of the facts, especially when you look at spring wheat as the example. I think we're moving into defense mode.
Well, Chip, and we heard it from both Carl Setzer and from Brian Split, and we've heard it from others in recent weeks. Hey, you know, you got any corn to sell? No, I don't have. No,
right.
I got nothing. And then the market pops, and suddenly they're looking to sell.
Yeah, hey, I forgot about this 50,000 bushel over here.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if we're headed into a downtrend here, I think Haney might be right. If we're switching over to defensive mode, that might shake some of those bushels loose.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very well put. Jim, and Haney mentioned the ad hoc programs. $4 billion in ERP payments have already been delivered.
Over $4 billion. And, you know, I knew when it was a little over a billion, but couldn't report it for various reasons that I won't get into. But it just gets me upset as a reporter of somewhat that they waited until $4 billion to report that at basically a political stop for Representative Axne in Iowa. I don't like stuff like that.
Yeah. And the payments are going to continue to roll. I don't think there's any
big
question.
Time, up to $6 billion. And that's much needed cash flow in certain states.
Right.
And that's just phase one.
Phase one. Corn plantings in the acreage report, basically as the trade expected. But Jim, you nailed it. I mean, bean plantings down 2.6 were 2.6 million acres below intentions.
You know, Chip, I went back and my notes tell me I'm going March intentions now. How could they be off like that? Not much. 1.1 million fewer soybean acres in North Dakota, 500,000 in Minnesota. So then I did some checking and the farmer response rate of that March survey, Chip, was just over 50%. Now, I don't have the data close at hand, but I recall a decade ago, that response rate was nearly 70%. So, you know, could soybeans go down more? Possibly. Could soybeans go up? Possibly. I think NASA's searching for answers. And farmer response rate for surveys is very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm trying to get the response rate for the acreage survey. And I think NAS people are out for the holidays. But, you know, for them to do almost all crops on the survey of those states that they're researching indicates something to me, Chip. Did the minor crops take some of the corn and bean ground? Did wheat come in? I think they do not know. And they're trying to find the total acres.
I think you may be right on that. And they're going to resurvey in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota.
Yes.
So
like, does this news warrant November beans being down 60?
No.
Like, you know, 61 and a quarter, 61 and a half, just watching it kind of go down as we talk here.
Right.
You know, it just seems to be the huge push lower here based on the news that we've just talked about.
Yeah,
overreaction.
I think what's happening here in the markets today is Grady mentioned it. There's some rumblings out there that China has washed out some old crop bean purchases, or rolled them over to 22 crop for the new crop delivery. So that's I think has shook the market a bit. But when you've got the new crop leading it to the downside rather than the nearbys, August off 50 cents with the November down 60. It suggests that there's something else going on in this. Beans rallied going into the numbers, and then we get a bullish number, and all the buying was already done.
Yeah.
For this market. So now going into a three-day weekend without a lot of weather risk out there, according to the markets, and according to a lot of the comments out there, they've just said that what they're saying today is we don't want to be on the long side of the market in front of a three-day weekend. That's I think is what's happening. And if you don't want to be on the long side, so you're getting out of longs, it also means that there isn't any fresh buying in the market to offset the long liquidation. So it's a mess in that soy complex right now. You guys have a great 4th of July and happy Canada Day up there.
Thanks, Chip.
Yeah, love it. Have a great 4th. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to take a little time off again next week, spend some time with the family. And so have a fun free-for-all next Friday. I'll be listening. All right.
And thanks, combined thanks. Signal to Noise and AgriTalk on Tuesday.
Heck yeah.
That's right.
Heck yeah. I
That's
can't wait.
Right. Nice. All right. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. And come back this afternoon. We've got Richard Brock from Brock Report.